Hello, welcome to this new edition of Viewpoints. Boris Chassagne here with you for the next half hour. On today's show, out-of-province university students wishing to study in Quebec's English universities could face a 100% tuition hike next year if the Quebec government gets its way. Bishop's University is fighting back.
So basically, they're doubling the tuition fees, and that's going to render studying in Quebec prohibitive. Canadian out-of-province students are already paying three times as much as Quebec resident students.
Selkirk College's Nelson Campus in BC will host its first Intercultural Day. The college is home to international students from across the globe. Also in BC, winter is right around the corner, and Nanaimo's warming centers are in dire need of government funding.
I think the fire risk and safety risk and human death toll is going to be a heck of a lot more expensive if we don't operate these types of services this winter.
Calgary becomes one step closer to completing its Ring Road. If all goes well, it should be done by next year. Also, Alberta's livestock producers receive aid after a drought-filled summer. And great news for the Kingston Great Lakes Museum. It will soon permanently showcase the SS Keewatin, a 102-meter-long passenger liner dating back to the same era as the Titanic.
There were some thousands of them built. There are only two or three left in the world today. And this is one of them.
Welcome to Viewpoints Local News Nationwide.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.
Thanks for keeping us company. Our first stop will take us to the province of Quebec, which is making headlines nationally after the Legault government announced that it will impose stiff tuition hikes on English-speaking out-of-province students starting next year. Out-of-province students and also international students will pay more in 2024. This, says Minister of Higher Education Pascal Derry, will strengthen the Francophone Language University Network. In dollars and cents, that means that students coming from other Canadian provinces and territories will be faced with a $17,000 tuition fee to study in Quebec's university, rather than the current fee of roughly $9,000. The three English-speaking universities in Quebec, Bishop's, McGill, and Concordia, are targeted by the new tariffs and will be especially hard hit. Bishop's University, a small university located an hour or so from Montreal in the Eastern Townships area, is actively working to raise awareness around its concerns. And it is asking townshippers to stand in solidarity with the 180-year-old institution as it encourages government officials to reevaluate its new measures. The principal of BU, Sébastien Lebel-Grenier, said that the new cost for out-of-province students will price out people wanting to study at BU and impact the university's budget by millions of dollars. In Knowlton, Quebec, journalist Taylor McClure spoke with Sébastien Lebel-Grenier, principal and vice-chancellor of Bishop's University. Here's part of her 30-minute-long report.
The measure that's most concerning is the measure that was announced for Canadian out-of-province. Basically, these are all the students that come from other Canadian provinces to study here at Bishop's or in other English language universities in Quebec. These students account for about close to 30% of students at Bishop's. They're an important portion of our community, and we think the measures will have a very severe impact on the institution. So the measures are as follows. The government has announced that the tuition fees for that category of students will increase from $9,000 to $17,000 per year. So basically, they're doubling the tuition fees, and that's going to render studying in Quebec prohibitive. Now, just so you get a more complete picture, as it stands now, Canadian out-of-province students are already paying three times as much as Quebec resident students. So if a student goes to Bishop's University and that student comes from Quebec, they're going to be paying $3,000 per year. If they come from any other Canadian province, they're going to be paying $9,000 per year. The average cost of tuition in other Canadian provinces at present stands at about $8,600 for all university programs in Canada. However, at Bishop's, our students are essentially coming to do undergraduate studies. And the average Canadian price for undergraduate studies in other Canadian provinces right now stands at about $7,500. So when students come to Bishop's, they're already deciding to pay more than they would pay if they were going elsewhere in Canada to come study at Bishop's. And now the price that's going to be imposed on them, $17,000, is going to be more than twice what the national average is. Our students, unfortunately, are not independently wealthy. We're not an institution of the elite. Our mission is to provide a very high quality education, university education, through a representative cross section of Canadian students and Quebec students. And therefore, we think that the vast majority of our students are going to be priced out from coming to Bishop's. And if the measures are implemented as they've been announced, we fear that we will be losing 90% or more of our Canadian out-of-province students. Now, that in itself is catastrophic on a financial level, but more fundamentally, it's going to alter the identity of our institution. We've been around for 180 years, and we've always had students coming in from throughout Canada. Our campus is a campus where different communities meet and learn to understand each other and to have an open point of view on the world. That identity of our institution is under attack, and we fear that if the measures are imposed, if they're applied as they've been announced, that will fundamentally transform who we are as an institution.
Have you already experienced some of that impact? Have you already had students coming to you and explaining how this has been affecting them? Or have you had students that were thinking of BU that have backtracked on their decision because of this?
Yes. So for students that are already registered at Bishop's, they will not be affected. They will be grandfathered in. So thankfully, these measures will not apply to existing students. But of course, they're slated to apply starting next fall, and we're already into our recruitment for next year, well into our recruitment for next year. And so I've been getting a lot of emails and calls from concerned prospective students who are basically telling us that Bishop's is the place they want to be, it's the place they want to go to, but they won't be able to afford it. And we've been getting a lot of feedback from alumni as well that have been telling us that they would not have been able to afford the incredible experience that Bishop's has provided them had tuition been as expensive as what is proposed. And that's really why we think that, putting out there that we expect to lose at least 90% of our Canadian out-of-province students is not far-fetched. This is really based on the feedback we've been getting. People are telling us that it will make studies at Bishop's or any other English language Quebec university prohibitive for Canadian out-of-province students.
Now, there is also a second measure as well, from my understanding, that applies to international students as well. It's not only going to be impacting out-of-province students, but students coming from other countries around the world as well. And I was wondering if you could highlight that too for our listeners. From my understanding, their tuition fees are also going to be hiked up extremely as well.
It's a bit different for international students. So what the announcement was is that there's going to be a minimum tuition fee of $20,000 that's going to be imposed on international students. That is a lot. And of course, it can be prohibitive. The fact of the matter is, though, that $20,000 is more or less what all Quebec universities are already charging international students because they're deregulated. There's no government funding at all for that category of students. So they are already facing steep tuition. And for the vast majority of universities, this will not translate into an increase in the amount of tuition that is being charged for international students. The big difference there is that the Quebec government is going to claw back or appropriate a significant portion of that money. It's going to be very variable per university, but for example, we expect that for Bishop's, it's going to amount to between $5,000 and $6,000, which is going to be clawed back by government, and that money is then going to be distributed to French language universities. So, taking from international tuition fees for English language universities, and then distributing that money to French language universities. The impact there is not going to be on attracting international students, is going to be on being able to provide education to these students. For bishops, we expect that that measure in and of itself is going to lead to a loss of about $2 million per year. Wow. That's extremely substantial for a university of our size. We just have around 2,650 students. So for us, that in itself is a very severe measure that's going to really compromise our ability to provide especially support to our international students. It's more costly for them to arrange for their recruitment and their coming over to Bishops, and we do provide more support because the transition to a Canadian university is sometimes difficult for these students. So this is going to really affect and compromise our ability to provide adequate services to international students.
What steps is BU taking next, or what steps has it already taken to address the potential fallout of these measures that are expected to be implemented next school year, the next fall, yes?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. So the first thing we've been doing is trying to make the general population aware of what's going on, and my talking to you and other media is really part of that strategy. I think that the population needs to know what these measures are about. We also need to be rectifying false information that was provided by government on what it costs for out-of-province students to come to study in Quebec, and really make the population understand that these students are not people who are trying to profit, take advantage of our system. They're actually people that choose to pay more to come here, and they're people that are coming to Quebec because they're curious about about Quebec society, and a great many of them are actually wanting to increase their French fluency. A lot of students that come have been in French language immersion when they were younger. They're curious about Quebec. They want to learn more. They want to get better in French. And so, you know, the very stereotypical portrait that has been given by the government of these students does not reflect our lived experience and the nature of their motivations. We feel that our mission as an institution of higher learning is to promote mutual understanding and to promote a more cohesive society. And to make that happen, you need to have diversity on campus. Diversity needs to be core to what we do. So we've got the Canadian diversity with our Canadian out-of-province students. We've got international diversity with our international students. We've got language diversity with the fact that a third of our students are Francophones. But we've also got other forms of diversity. For example, Bishops has been doing a lot of work to be attractive and supportive to Indigenous students, and that's been a very important push for us. So diversity needs to be a lived experience. If it is not, it is not something that you can teach in abstract form. It needs to be a lived experience where people will actually gain understanding of others and open their mind to living in a pluralistic society. So this is what we're about, and we can only achieve this if life on campus reflects that objective. Of course, we've been talking to government and trying to give them a better understanding of our particular circumstances, but we will also be counting on the mobilization of the population. And I would encourage the population to speak to their member of the National Assembly, speak to members of government in order to address the very real concerns we have for the future well-being of Bishops Universities. They need to be made aware that the community cares about Bishops.
Well, thank you so much again, Sebastien, for taking some time out of your schedule.
Thank you very much.
The rest of this interview can be heard on canada-info.ca.
Anastasia Avakumova in beautiful British Columbia, and you are tuned to Viewpoint.
And to the other end of the country, where the Selkirk College's 10th Street campus in Nelson, British Columbia, will host its first Intercultural Day this November. Intercultural Day is an annual event designed to showcase the diversity of their student body and surrounding community. Selkirk College is home to international students from across the globe, many of which are working towards getting their permanent residency in Canada. This year, the college decided to host the event not only in Nelson, but also in Castlegar. Here's Scott Anishak in Kootenay, British Columbia.
Selkirk College is holding two Intercultural Day events this November. The annual event has been held at the Castlegar campus for several years, but this year, they're also holding one at the 10th Street campus in Nelson for the first time. Bob Hall, the communications coordinator at Selkirk College, says they're looking for the community to get involved and share their cultures with students and staff.
This is the first time this event is being held in Nelson. In Castlegar, it's primarily a student and faculty run event, and that's what dominates. But in Nelson, being that it's the first year, we want to sort of expand that. We would like other cultural groups to be part of it. So we're asking for their involvement to come and set up a booth and take part. It's broader than the Castlegar event just because the Castlegar campus is a larger campus. So in order for this to be the sort of bustling, successful event that we want it to be, we definitely want the community to come and set up a booth and share it with our students and our staff.
Selkirk's Intercultural Days are an opportunity for the college to celebrate the diversity of their students, as well as the growing diversity of the West Kootenays, part of which is because of the large number of international students Selkirk brings in each year.
These events are intended to showcase not only our students, but the entire sort of cultural diversity of all of our community. So Nelson is becoming more and more so. And, you know, a lot of that has to do with Selkirk College and the programs that we offer there, bringing in more and more international students. Not all of the students, but most of the students are working on their permanent residency, right? They want to be part of Canada. So we've designed cooking and hospitality programs specifically for international students. And in May, we bring in two new cohorts of each. Yeah, Nelson is definitely growing.
These intercultural days allow for the indigenous and traditional European settler cultures of the Kootenays to share their traditions with the growing number of Indian, Asian, and African immigrants in the area, many of which are represented by the Selkirk College student population.
Selkirk College has a broad range of countries which our students come from. I mean, India is a big nation that comes here, Philippines, but we have several, you know, African nations that students are coming from, and an increasing number, China, Japan, South Korea. It's all over the world, really.
Intercultural Day at the 10th Street campus in Nelson will be held on November 8th. The Castlegar event is on November 16th.
Hi, I'm Ed Halverson in Liverpool, Nova Scotia, and you're listening to Viewpoints.
So I know you don't want to hear it, but we all know that winter is just around the corner. And for the unhoused, winter isn't just an inconvenience, it can be deadly. For those who live on the streets, warming centers are essential to their survival, such as the case in Nanaimo, British Columbia. A presentation by the Nanaimo Systems Planning Organization, SPO, stressed that the city is in a dire need for multiple daytime warming centers this winter. The SPO's executive director, John McCormick, said that the city has some soul searching to do when it comes to funding such centers. And he added that the city could challenge the province to help fund them. McCormick says there's no way around the fact that we need warming centers and that there are costs associated with the operation of them that we can't avoid. More on this story with Mick Sweetman in Nanaimo, BC.
The SPO's report concludes that the lack of provincial funding for warming center operations is a significant risk, but says that the risks to the people in the street should outweigh concerns about the city's budget. The SPO estimates it would cost $265,000 to run a warming center from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., 7 days a week, with four staff and a capacity of 20 to 25 visitors. It's estimated that 300 people would use each center over the course of the season for a total of 4,000 visits. Councillor Ian Thorpe says the funding should not come from the city.
In 2022-23, indicates in your report, the city drew on the UBCM Strength and Communities funding that has come to an end, and no funding has been identified for warming centers for the 2023-24 year. So it seems to me we're nowhere unless we can identify some funding stream. And I hope I'm not hearing the implication that city taxpayers will be the intended sole source or source at all for the necessary funding.
SPO Board Chair and former City Councillor Don Bonner says the city needs to take a leadership role by funding warming centres to ensure adequate services and then apply for funding from the provincial and federal governments.
I think what city needs to do is decide, is this something that we want to take on and then recoup the money later on from the province and the feds? Because I really only think that if we rely on the feds or the province to pony up programs every once in a while, as we said, four different ones, instead of the city doing one program covering everybody, and then they go after the funding at the end. And that way, with the current budget that happens year after year, we can attract the people to do the job because they know the income to pay for their wages will be there year after year after year.
A spokesperson for BC Housing told CHOY that it's the city's responsibility to fund daytime warming centers. Siobhan Johnson, a director at Risebridge, operated a warming center last winter at the Mid-Island Community Connection Center. She says that without consistent funding from the city, it will be impossible to staff an emergency overnight shelter this year.
Councillor Thorpe had stated that he was hoping to hear that it wasn't the suggestion that city taxpayers would be paying for a warming center this winter. I don't see how that's not the answer. I think that's our only answer we currently have. It's the only tangible thing that we could have at our fingertips right now. And again, taxpayers are going to pay for these challenges regardless if we operate a warming center or not. I think the fire risk and safety risk and human death toll is going to be a heck of a lot more expensive if we don't operate these types of services this winter.
According to the SPO report, the Nanaimo's point in time count of people who are experiencing homelessness in 2023 was 514, up 20% from the previous count in 2020. The report notes that this is an underestimate of the Nanaimo's homeless population. Of the people surveyed, 80% said they had no access to shelter of any kind. The report says that Nanaimo's emergency shelter capacity is about 100, but rises to 150 in the winter due to the opening of temporary emergency shelters. Councillor Hillary Eastmere says City Council needs to push the province to provide adequate funding.
We're definitely in a worse position than we were last year because we don't have any funding identified. So I think we need to ring the alarm on this as soon as possible. Always going to fall to the city not doing enough, and I'm willing to take the heat for that, but I really want us to be able to push it back and say that we need the funding to be able to do this. We have the operators and capacity to do it, but the dollars can't come out of our budget every single year. It's just not sustainable.
Councillor Aaron Hemmons says the council should highlight the disparity in shelter spaces in Nanaimo compared to Vancouver.
We have 76% of our unhoused population who don't have a place to sleep at night, whereas Vancouver, with a population of about 5,000 unhoused, have just over 30% spending the night outside. So that is a significant injustice in how they're distributing the funding.
The committee unanimously passed a recommendation that City Council release a statement about the lack of funding from the province. This is Mick Sweetman.
Hi, this is Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick. You are tuned to Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories online at canada-info.ca.
After experiencing a few delays earlier this month, the Marine Museum of the Great Lakes at Kingston has officially welcomed the arrival of the Titanic-era SS Keewatin. Built in 1907, the Keewatin is a 102-meter-long passenger liner. The ship had 108 staterooms and was manned by 86 officers and crew. In its heyday, the SS Keewatin traveled between Thunder Bay on Lake Superior and Port McNichol on the Georgian Bay in Ontario. The SS Keewatin is the oldest remaining Edwardian-era ship of its kind in the world. It has just undergone refurbishment at the Hamilton Shipyard and will now permanently reside at the Great Lakes Museum, located at the historic Kingston Dry Dock. Journalist Christina Laurie talked to the museum's board chair, Chris West, to learn more.
The Keewatin was one of a number of ships from different lines on the U.S. and Canadian side that were transiting the same routes and carrying goods and passengers in both directions throughout the Great Lakes. In the case of the Keewatin, in the early days, many immigrants who settled in the prairies arrived in this fashion. They may have landed in Quebec City or Montreal and eventually made their way by train to Port McNichol, the rail terminal there, and then continued their journey by ship all the way up to the Lakehead, and then got on CPR again and headed out west. So there's a whole lot of Canadian history tied up in the Keewatin, and you can't just tell all of that as you're being guided through the ship and your jaw is dropping in awe at the grandeur of it. It's really grand. It's like a movie set. No, you need a quiet, contemplative space where you've got this exhibit on shore where you can grasp some of this contextual information first. So that's the interpretive exhibit. And that's the third one that we're working on. And that's a big, big job. We have stories to tell about the entire Great Lakes Basin and even beyond in both directions, whether you want to think, where did Keewatin come from originally? Scotland, Europe, what was happening in the early 1900s in Europe, and why were these ships built? There were some thousands of them built, Christina. There are only two or three left in the world today. Only two, and this is one of them.
Thanks to Christina Lowry. And as we're close to the end of the show, we turn to Calgary, Alberta, where the city and government officials held a grand opening for one of the recently completed legs of the Stoney Trail, which connects Trans-Canada Highway to Old Banff Coach Road and Bow Trail in a 4-kilometer stretch of new freeway. This sets the stage for the final phase of construction, set to be completed next year. When done, Calgary will be surrounded by 101-kilometer-long multi-lane freeway that has been in the works for over a decade. We also learned that livestock producers in the province who struggled through drought conditions this summer will get a helping hand from both the provincial and federal governments. The two levels of government are partnering up to deliver assistance under the 2023 Canada-Alberta Drought Livestock Assistance Response. Here's R.J. Sigurdsson, the Minister of Agriculture and Irrigation, and George Shahal, MP of Calgary Skyview.
I'm relieved to announce that Alberta is partnering with the Government of Canada on a $165 million agri-recovery response. This will provide funding to help livestock producers impacted by this year's challenges.
It's been a tough season with devastating wildfires and serious drought conditions impacting operations. But I want Albertans to know that our governments are working hard to help the industry recover.
And to wrap up, more good news come from the West. The city of Edmonton will host the Canadian Finals Rodeo in 2024, 2025, and 26. The Canadian Finals Rodeo got its start in Edmonton in 1974. Next year will be the 50th anniversary of the CFR, and it will be held in its rightful home of Edmonton. Here's Ryan Hunt speaking with Tracy Bernard, CEO of Explore Edmonton.
Over the last 2 years, this community has been advocating, pulling together our supporters, attending rodeo, and just really building the business case to demonstrate that we are the best opportunity to be able to produce the rodeo in 2024. There'll be lots of things happening in and around restaurants and hotels, so lots of things to do. It's going to be great. This is the culmination of the rodeo season for our country.
And that's it for us at Viewpoints. Thanks to our journalists Mick Sweetman, Taylor McClure, Ryan Hunt, Christina Lowry, and Scott Onishek. National coordinators Victoria Fenner and Maureen McEwen. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and your local radio station. Please stay tuned to what follows. I'm your host and producer, Bor Chassin. Thanks so much for lending us your listening ears. Have a great week. Until the next. Ciao.
Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.